anyone can learn how to host a good event. And if you feel shy or introverted, or like this takes you outside of your comfort zone, I can promise you that everyone wants to be invited to a party. Everyone wants to know someone who brings people together. And all you have to do is make that step to host an event. Any one party can help change your life. I've seen it happen with hundreds of people, and I think we all could use a new friend and more parties.
Welcome back to the Pool Chasers Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Villafania, and today we've got a very special guest. We've got Mr. Nick Gray. How you doing, Nick?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me here today.
Of course. Thanks for your time. So, you know, we have you on because you wrote the book called The 2-Hour Cocktail Party, and I heard it on the Art of Manliness podcast.
Yes.
And
yes.
Awesome. It seriously, it rocked my world. It was so good. And it's weird because I'm not somebody that would even think about throwing a cocktail party or maybe even attending one. But after listening to you talk about the benefits of it and how to do it, I feel like I was a lot more at ease. And I was like, you know what? Like, I feel like the Pool Chasers audience needs to hear this. And I, after talking to you, I might throw my own little party. Who knows? Let's see what happens. But give the listeners kind of the lowdown on who Nick is.
So, okay, a little bit about me. I am 41. I live in Austin, Texas. I just moved here about 2.5 years ago. Before that, I lived in New York City.
Big change. And
while, huge change. Oh, my God. And while I may speak confidently, I can tell you that I was not an extrovert. I really didn't have a lot of friends when I was in my 20s. I was focused on business and trying to grow my company. And then eventually I moved to New York City thinking like, okay, I need to make friends. I need to have a social life. And that is where everything started to change for me, to figure out how I could, I think, just build relationships. So I started and sold 2 successful businesses. I was always an entrepreneur. And yet my social life for fun, I started to host these events because frankly, I would go to these networking events in New York City that were loud in clubs. And I'm not the type of person who's going to go up to people and be like, hey, so what's your name? What do you do? Nothing against those people, but that's just never been something that I'm successful with. And I would frankly leave those so-called networking events or meetups just feeling like a loser, because I wouldn't talk to anybody and I would just be like, God, like, this is all my fault. I'm not going to meet anybody. I moved here to make friends and I'm not doing it. And what I realized was I needed to stop going to bad events and learn how to host my own good ones. I realized that it's not that I was bad or people didn't want to be my friend. It's just I wasn't going to things that were conducive to creating those connections. So I started experimenting with formats and formulas of different event styles and learned that there's a couple key things that you can do to make almost any gathering more successful. And that's what my book is about and really includes as a step-by-step guide.
Very good, very good. So let's start with the first question, and that is, why should someone host a party, and you know, what are the benefits from doing so?
So we'll talk about it first from a business perspective and then from a personal. From a business perspective, it can be hard to make sales right now. I talked to a mortgage broker last week and they said, bro, we're dying out here. Like, it is a brutal, brutal market. With interest rates the way they are, nobody's getting loans. I mean, it's hard. They said, we would love to do this. We need to find new ways to get new sales and reach people that we've relied on too much a growing economy to just lift all boats, right? From a business perspective, you may want to host something for new clients, for hiring, for networking with your vendors and suppliers. There's a variety of reasons, but the crux of it is that you want to build it to grow your network of acquaintances and loose connections. Because we find that in business and even in personal, some of the biggest, best opportunities come from these weak ties or loose connections. Like, it's not your employee always that will help you land a big deal. It's the random person you happen to meet in the neighborhood who says that they need a little bit of work, or they know somebody who needs work on that. When you're looking for a job, it's not your best friend that refers you at the company. It's that random LinkedIn post of the person that you may have worked with 4 years ago who you happen to see about. And building up the strength of those loose connections is something I've had a lot of success with and seen others as well. So that's the main reason, from a business perspective, to build your network of relationships for hiring, for sales, even amongst your own team. That's a great thing to do.
Yeah. So can you talk about the personal side? Because I imagine that kind of, you know, you're building confidence and sort of bleeds over into business.
From the personal side, it's the same thing I talked about on the Art of Manliness podcast. And that is that, you know, there is something of a friendship recession that's happening. It is, whether you want to call it a loneliness epidemic or whatever, over the last 5 years, we've seen something like 19% of American men say they don't have a single close friend. That's someone that could call at 2 o'clock in the middle of the night for an emergency. And building those relationships, frankly, as I get older, it's harder than ever to make new friends. It's a little bit awkward, actually. You know, we kind of have our established relationships. When you move to a new town, how do you say, like, hey, do you want to be my friend? And so what I found was that all friendships start first in the acquaintance phase. And getting people to go from that acquaintance to friend happens over a few times of seeing them and hanging out. And I was able to make a lot of friends by hosting events that I could cast a wide net and invite people to. And then some of the best ones, I'd ask if they want to hang out one-on-one.
So I've heard you say on other podcasts too about, you know, just being more disconnected. And I couldn't agree with you more. And I really think that, including myself, which I didn't feel like this maybe a few years ago, but really feeling kind of a disconnect. And, you know, it would be nice to put together a party and have, you know, real people there, build real connection, because everything is on social media now. And, you know, being a marketer, and maybe everyone feels this way now, but you don't know what's legitimate. You don't know what people's intentions are. And not to say that people don't have, you know, bad intentions in person, but it's definitely different in person rather than being online.
You talk about that idea of the bad intentions. And I think that that's what networking events, why they get a bad rap, is that the people they attract tend not to be those that are really interested in building relationships. And it's why I suggest kind of a controversial idea, but in my book I say, you really need to host your party at home, at your home, to take it out of the mindset of, you know, a transactional networking event. It's really vulnerable to do it at home, and a lot of people object to it. I walk through in a chapter about the reasons why, and objections and things like that.
Yeah. And I suggest everybody get this book. I got it right here. I got it a while back ago, but dude, this thing is game changer.
Thank you for checking it
yeah,
out.
Yeah. I love it. I got it highlighted, all that good stuff. It's like kind of like a Bible or something.
Thank so you. Thanks, Greg.
Yeah, no problem. Maybe you could walk the listeners through some of the chapters of the book and some of the steps in kind of building, you know, this ideal party.
Yeah. So the number one success indicator that I've found, and also the number one fear of a new host, is that nobody will show up. And so much of my work and the stuff that I give people advice on is in guaranteeing that they're going to have a full guest list. I've found that the sweet spot for a cocktail party is about 16 to 22 people. Now, I know what you may be thinking, wow, that's a lot of people. But here's the counterintuitive thing. Above 15, like in that sweet spot of 16 to 22, it's actually less work for you than if you were to have 8 or 9 people. And I'll tell you why. With 8 or 9 people, you kind of have to babysit everything. there's a lot of awkward moments of silence. It's not enough people for multiple small groups to form and for people to feel like they can walk around and step away from any one conversation. Oftentimes in those events, you kind of have everybody circle up and it's that awkward, like, are we all one conversation? Do we split it into smaller ones? What happens, you know?
Yeah, I could see this being 16... totally great or just being awful. Like, if nobody showed up,
right.
That would be, I can't think of anything worse than that. That would suck really bad.
That's the number one fear. And that's a huge, real fear that a lot of people have. So I'll tell you the way that we're going to avoid and guarantee that that won't happen. And the way you do that isn't just in the planning of your process. Number one is you're going to give yourself what I call the party runway. And that means you're going to give yourself a healthy amount of time to fill up your guest list and to invite people. I recommend that that is 3 weeks before. You know, some of the biggest new party failures I see is when someone decides on a Monday or Tuesday that they're going to host a party on Friday night. There's a lot that's wrong with that. Number one, they didn't give enough party runway to fill up the guest list. Number two, they didn't use the concept of a core group, which I'm going to talk about. And number three, they chose to host it on a Friday night, which is a socially competitive night. In fact, in my book, I suggest people really only host on Tuesday or Wednesday nights. And the reason for that is they're not socially competitive. You're not going to have, what do I mean socially competitive? I mean, other stuff gets planned. For many people, Friday, Saturday nights, even Thursdays, it's their time to go out. And they're looking for a big thing. It's also when other parties get planned. So you're more likely to get bumped or for something else to get scheduled and for you to have no shows. So Tuesday, Wednesday nights, easier for people to say yes, less no shows, more RSVPs, higher attendance, which will almost guarantee success. One more thing that you can do to guarantee success is in testing out your date with people before you plan the party. So I talk about this concept called a core group. These are your neighbors, your family, your close friends. And you'll send them a message beforehand saying something like, hey, I'm thinking of hosting a party in 3 weeks on October 27th on a Tuesday night from 6 to 8 p.m. If I do it, would you come? That's the key phrase. If I do it, would you come? And so you're looking for firm yeses from that core group, and you don't plan anything until you get at least five. So that's really one of the secrets, because now you know, well, if at least these five people come, they're my close friends, I'll have a good time. And now you're going to use them for social proof to get other people to RSVP and things like that.
Yeah, I love that. And you got to do your due diligence, right? Like, don't plan it on Super Bowl Sunday or Halloween or something like that. It'd be a disaster. Nobody's going to come.
That's the ultimate socially competitive time, right? I mean, I tell a story in my book of a guy who'd never hosted before, and he and his fiance decided to host on New Year's Eve. They wanted to make a go of it. Oh my God, he was so stressed. It was nearly a disaster.
Yeah, unless they're very close friends and family, that's going to be a very, very hard sell. So I'm curious, you know, because I've listened to podcasts and, you know, reading your book and things like that. So I do have some slightly more probably technical questions. And that's, you know, being the biggest fear that people don't show up. Do you kind of have, you know, set a number of people that you send this invite to? And if anybody does an RSVP, or whatever happens, do you have kind of like a reserve list or something like that where it's like, you know, you want to, you know, fill these slots?
Good question. So how many people do you need to invite in order to get 15 to 22? I find it really depends on each person and the quality of their network and frankly, the size of their town. When I lived in New York, there was so much going on and the connections were much looser. You know, you have a lot more acquaintances and a lot less close friends in a big city. So I found that I would have to get, you know, sometimes I have to invite 40 people to get 15 or 20 people to come. I've talked to readers of my book that say, oh, you know, I planned 3 weeks in advance. Nothing else was going on. I invited 17. 17 people showed up and 17 people said yes, right? Because they followed everything with a nice runway. It really depends. But a safe estimate is about, you know, 1.5 to 2 times as many people as you want to attend, you would want to invite. Now, a pro tip, because you're asking advanced questions, is you would want to stagger those invites. So maybe send 5 or 10 at a time, not mass email 25 people all at once, because then what if they all say yes, right? Then you could have too many people coming. I've seen that happen sometimes. Or a lot of people say yes, and they ask if they can bring their significant other, their spouse, something like that. Now you've got more than you planned for. But those are good problems to have.
This episode is brought to you by Lion Financial. Offer your customers the industry's best financing options and sell more pools. Lion Financial's low rates and long terms give your clients more buying power by making a pool affordable one low monthly payment at a time. They offer unsecured loans with low fixed rates, terms up to 30 years, single loan amounts up to $200,000, options for credit scores of 640 plus, and no 6% consulting fees like other finance sources charge your customers. Lion Financial pays builders directly, ensuring payment on time and in full. Call 877-754-5966 or visit lionfinancial.net today. All right, now back to the episode.
So let's talk a little bit about the preparation, you know. So you've sent out, you know, the invites, you've got 15, 20 people coming to the cocktail party. How are you preparing for this?
The preparations are not as much as you would think. It's actually more around the messaging. And the preparations that I talk about are keeping your event top of mind, again, to guarantee a good attendance rate. So that means sending 3 reminder messages in the days leading up to your party. That means the last 2 of your reminders, you're going to send guest bios, which are little blurbs about half or more of your guests. Those are pretty much the biggest preparations. But as far as supplies go, you'll spend maybe $100 or less on some basic supplies for beverages. And by the way, the book is called The 2-Hour Cocktail Party, but it doesn't revolve around alcohol. In fact, I don't drink alcohol myself. There's not a single drink recipe that's in the book. But you will have some things, so it's a kind of self-serve bar for people who want to have a drink. And you'll buy some basic snacks, some simple, light finger food snacks that people can snack on. That's the extent. You'll do a light cleanup or sort of a tidy of your house, maybe put some welcome signs around. One simple thing that I suggest everybody do is to just label where your trash can is, where the bathroom is. Post up a little sign to say, welcome, come on inside, shoes off if you're a shoes off house. Things like that to help people feel more welcome as they come in go a long way.
Yeah, for sure. How much can people expect to spend, you know, on one of these parties, like maybe the lower end of, you know, a cocktail party?
On the lower end, I would say you could spend $50 to $90 to get basic supplies. By the way, the supplies we're talking about are name tags, some Sharpie markers, some plastic cups. I say plastic cups just because it's easier for me to clean up and to manage. Some snacks. We're talking chips, salsa, hummus, guacamole, maybe some baby carrots, things like that. And basic drinks. A lot of people, in fact, probably have a lot of these drinks already. But if you were having to buy everything in advance, we're talking, you know, maybe $60 worth of alcohol, $20 worth of juice and seltzer and sodas, perhaps.
Yeah. And I mean, your experience, you know, throwing all these parties and being around people that you've coached to do these parties. I mean, even if you were spending $500 or $1,000, I mean, you're making this type of impact on 20 people, especially if it's a, you know, successful event. I mean, that's going to stick with people for a really long time. Am I right?
Yeah, it does. I mean, there's massive benefits. I hosted a lot of these parties and I ended up launching a multi-million dollar business out of the network that I built from these parties. And so why I spend so much time on this project and this book is because I got so many benefits myself. And I just know that by giving value, by hosting a party, By the way, the secret is that everybody wants to be invited to a party. And when you host a party at your home, when you invite someone, that's a little gift that you get to give to invite someone to a party. And that is what I'm talking about, which is, it's not the transactional networking event where, you know, what can you do for me? Buy my services, hire me. It's much more thinking, how can we help each other?
Sure. Do you ever think about, you know, is there like a balance of men or women at these parties?
I do think about that. And I've seen it work both ways. There's a guy up in Dallas whose name is Dieter, and he hosts primarily men's groups, and he uses this format for that. I've had a lot of readers that are women that'll host a Wine Wednesday party. When I host my own parties, I like to have a really good mix. Ideally, half guys, half women. But I would say the best piece of advice I could say is, for your first party, don't try to overthink it and just focus on getting that around 18 number of people, maybe 20, who would say yes and sign up an RSVP. That's really kind of the most important thing. Later on, you can start to curate your party. You can start to say, oh, you know, I want to invite small business owners. That's who I want to hang out with. Or, ooh, I'd really like to meet my neighbors. I'm going to focus on them. That's when you can do it. But your first party should be so easy. It should be a cakewalk, like a low stakes affair.
Right. You can tell I'm already overthinking this.
No, that's okay. That's all right. I mean, you're not overthinking it. I've heard some of the craziest questions you could ever imagine. I've gotten them all, having helped hundreds of people host their first party. I think I'm up to 409 or so now. I've heard every single more advanced question in the book.
That's awesome. So, I mean, before we get into anything else, I'm just curious, what are some little things that maybe not in your book that, you know, you personally as a host, is there anything special that you did that, I don't know, made your parties a little bit more successful? Because I feel like being a host to a party, that's a lot of responsibility. You're kind of mingling, you're making sure maybe nobody's left out, you know, there's enough drinks and food, you know, whatever. There's a lot going on.
Some other things that aren't in my book that would be helpful, like for a first-time host, is that what you want to know?
Yeah, and maybe, I don't know if it's like a personality trait, you know, just keep on smiling, keep on talking, like, you know, little things like that. Or maybe it is in your book, but, you know, what are some good things?
Sure. One good piece of advice that I have for new hosts is to ask some of your core friends, those close friends, to show up to your event 20 minutes early. Whether it's to help give you an extra set of hands and in tidying or setting up, or simply just to put you at ease and make you comfortable so that that first person who arrives, it's not awkward. I've hosted, oh my God, it seems like sometimes when I host, the first people to arrive are the ones I know the least. It's like I have the least good, and they show up right on the dot, and sure enough, I'm always running late, I'm never ready. And I'm running around, and now this person who I hardly know is here, and they don't see me fully prepared. So I'll do that still sometimes. I'll ask, I'll say, hey, Greg, would you mind showing up like 20 minutes early? By the way, I say 20 minutes early because even my friends are late. And I know if I say, oh, would you mind coming 5 or 10 minutes early? Well, they'll be 15 minutes late, and they'll show up approximately on time, which isn't helpful. So I say, come 20 minutes early and just come hang out, and that's fine. So that's a little pro tip or an advanced hack that if you're feeling a little nervous or stressed, it can help to have people that you really feel safe and comfortable around be there first and early.
Dude, that's a great idea. So, you know, one thing I was thinking about through all this is, you know, is there any type of agenda or a theme or anything like that, or are people just kind of coming to meet up because they were invited and they're just talking amongst each other? Like what is going on exactly?
The general theme is that this is an event to mix and mingle with new people. And I suggest that people really invite from different buckets of their life. For example, maybe you have kids and you know some parents that go to school with your kids. You'd invite a couple of them. And then maybe you have some neighbors who you always see when you're walking the dog or out and about, but you've never really spent time one-on-one. You probably wouldn't have dinner with them, but it's It's a nice way to invite them. And then another bucket could be folks you've worked with, or you have LinkedIn, or maybe you went to school with or something. And it's the theme is generally, hey, I know a bunch of interesting people here in town. I just want to get my groups together. Let's meet some new people. I think anybody can use a new friend. That's the general gist of it. I mean, that's the theme. Certainly, you can have themes like Halloween or game night or something like that. But at the very beginning, I suggest I tell people, hey, just focus on hosting a happy hour. Trust me, you're going to be blown away by how excited your friends are to be invited to something like this. Because the reality is not enough people are hosting right now. We need more people hosting events like this.
Yeah. Do you ever have a problem with, you know, you invite all these people and it's like the common denominator is you, where, you know, a lot of these people might be like clinging to you and you might be having too long of a conversation with, you know, one person or something like that? Because I could definitely see that happening.
Yeah, certainly the idea of you being the central hub, which is what I hear you saying. It's like, okay, what do these people have in common? All they have in common is that they all know me. And that's normal too. A lot of people think, oh, I don't know if my different friend groups are going to mix. Oh, I don't know. And then I talk to them the next day and I'm like, hey, how'd that go? And they're like, oh, you'd never believe. I never thought these people would get along. And this person was talking to this person. We never know who, and you can't try to guess which of your friends are going to get along. Trust me, it will surprise you, the new connections that are made.
Yeah. And I noticed, you know, in one of your YouTube videos, you were actually by a swimming pool. I'm like, oh my God, this is perfect. And, you know, I was going to ask, like, you know, if, you know, we're in the pool industry, we've got either access to pools or, you know, the people we're working for have pools. And if they want to throw a cocktail party or we want to throw a cocktail party, do you suggest, you know, just doing it poolside, like by the pool patio, or blending kind of the, you know, sort of kitchen into the backyard?
I'm so glad you asked, because that's an advanced move. I suggest starting the party inside near the kitchen to keep it a tight, closed environment that feels a little bit crowded. That crowded energy of people showing up and bumping into each other at the beginning of a party is what I want. I want high energy. And then I tell people, now for your first icebreaker or your second icebreaker, you'll take everybody outside and say, all right, everybody, in 2 minutes, we're going to go outside into the back. We're going to do a round of icebreakers. And that's when you then open up the backyard. You go stand out by the pool or something like that. What you're doing, it's an advanced move. You're moving people around the space. And why is that helpful? Well, number one, it opens up the party. It seems like a new adventure, and people like that. Number two, you break up the groups. I'm looking at my events. Are the people talking to the same people? I actually don't want that. I want to see a lot of movement around the party. I want to see different groups talking to different people. And when you take them out back near the pool, it opens up. It's an exciting new thing for the party to keep growing.
Love it. How have those parties worked out? Anytime you're by a swimming pool, how's the energy?
The energy is great. And you know what? A lot of people say they might not go swimming, but the idea that they could go swimming is very attractive. Right? And I'm sure that you hear that a lot in the world of pools and pool ownership. Now, pool parties themselves are a whole nother animal. and hosting something like that with name tags and dress code and stuff like that, certainly there's some very magical things there. I would say, though, that I've even seen people host a so-called pool party and people don't get in. They still have fun. They're there, but they're talking, they're chatting, or they get in the pool and they chat, but it's not like this crazy thing. So it certainly adds to it. And the beautiful nature of having a pool in the backyard, the photographs, everything pops a little bit more. It's a little bit more exciting.
Yeah, that's a great point. That would definitely make for some really good, you know, social media posts, or, you know, even it, you probably send it invitations like these are some photos from our, you know, last cocktail party. That would be probably pretty special.
Yes, and it really works well for inviting new people. It's just so cool.
Yeah.
Who doesn't want to get invited to a pool party, by the way? Everybody wants to get invited.
Yeah. And I'm more definitely talking about, you know, the cocktail party by the pool, definitely not like getting in, because yeah, that's probably a whole other animal. It's like, where are people gonna, you know, you need towels, where are they gonna change at? Yeah, there's so many other things that probably go with it.
Yeah.
So what is kind of a, you know, dress code for something like this? Is it usually casual, or do you kind of have to make sort of that judgment call depending on, you know, what industry you're in or whatever?
I think that the dress code I'm looking for is whatever makes it easy for people to show up and attend. I've said before in my parties that, hey, the dress code is super casual, come as you are. And I'm really trying to make it as easy as possible for people just to show up. I am glad you mentioned the dress code, though, because telling people what it is helps them have an idea, especially for over-preparers. They want to know, what do I wear? Is this a fancy cocktail party? Is it a formal cocktail party? So I will include in at the end of the invite, hey, the dress code's super casual. Swing by after work or wear whatever you feel comfortable in. We're going for a super relaxed vibe.
Just wear deodorant. Please.
Just wear deodorant, especially in the hot summers.
Exactly. How are the parties in Austin? You know, I've been out there once. We were out there probably like 6 months ago, and man, I fell in love with that place. I actually had a couple guests now. I just had one last week from Austin as well. And man, that place is banging.
It's really nice. I love it out here in Austin. We do have brutal summers. I was lucky enough to travel most of the summer and avoid that 45-day streak of 100-plus temperatures, but now the temperature's coming down, we're getting a little bit of rain. It's quite nice. It's awesome.
I love it. And are there usually the parties there smaller, like in smaller apartments and houses and things like that?
I think it really depends. There's huge parties on lake houses, and then there's small parties in people's apartments. And so just like any place, you can find whatever type of parties you want. Because it is easier in New York, or sorry, here in Austin to have a big home than it was in New York City. I guess you're right. I probably have gone to more big house parties, but my style is really that 15 to 22 people. That's where I find the most success.
Yeah. So, you know, you're hosting this party. Is there anything that you should be aware of? I mean, if this is kind of a business networking event for myself that I've, you know, orchestrated, put together, like, should I be doing something to make sure that I'm, you know, keeping these relationships intact?
One thing that I always do is I send a follow-up message, a thank you note. But if you're hosting this for building relationships, my best piece of advice would be is at the party itself, you know, 30 minutes before it's over, step back and think about who you'd like to see again. And at the party, say, hey, I'd really love to get to know you more. You know, it's my party. I haven't had a chance to kind of speak to you one-on-one. Can I follow up with you tomorrow and maybe schedule a coffee or something like that? And that's the way to go deeper and schedule those things. And I find that if you make that ask during your party, it's so much easier to get the yes the next day and schedule something and get it really on the calendar.
I love that. Is there anything that people should avoid, you know, when throwing these parties at any stage of their party throwing career?
Yes, there are definitely things to avoid. One of the biggest mistakes I see is people going too big or reaching from the top shelf on one of their first parties. What do I mean by that is your first party, you've got this customer or client that you're dying to land, and you invite them to your party, to your first party, or somebody you really want to impress, and you invite them to your first party. Well, that doesn't work out well because then you tend to get a little too nervous and anxious about that first party success. You might be unwilling to stop the party for a round of icebreakers or to use name tags to take yourself out of your comfort zone when you're really trying to impress people. So I say the first party, just make it easy. Make it as easy as possible. Don't use it for business networking. Don't invite that star client you're trying to land. Keep it simple.
So I had this idea, you know, we have pool builders that are building swimming pools. We have people that are servicing pools. Don't you think it would be a great idea to tell people about your book and maybe even this podcast? Because, hey, if you have a house with a pool in the backyard, you're no different than any one of us. Like, you could be throwing these parties and making your own connections. Don't you think that would be a good idea?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yes, absolutely. I'm a self-published author. I put this book out as a labor of love, and I really do rely on podcasts like this and then my own readers to host a party and hopefully have a great word of mouth to their friends when their friends want to host a party about my book. So I launched my book about a year and a half ago, and it's been a whole journey learning about that word of mouth marketing. I'm happy to say I've done very well for a self-published book, but my goal is to get 500 people who read my book to then host a party and send me the selfie afterwards. That's what I call a verified party host. So I'm trying to get 500 of those. I count every single one. It's some of my favorite parts where I get to talk to them the day after their party. That's kind of the approach that I'm going, is to get people to actually read it and then host a party. Because it's not, you know, I think you probably know how it is with a podcast, right? You could get somebody to listen to it, but to get them to actually take action and write a review or share it to a friend can be a lot harder. Same thing with books.
Yeah, most definitely. Well, congrats on that. What's like the craziest thing that's happened at one of your parties?
The craziest thing that's happened at one of my parties.
Throwing over 400 or however many parties you have, I have to imagine that there's been some shenanigans.
It's so funny now because now, like, nothing phases me with this type of stuff.
I bet.
And I'm just like, wow, this is exciting. Okay, cool. There is bad crazy, and I'll give bad crazy as an example of how it turned out. It turned out great, but it was quite crazy in the moment. I was hosting at a place. I was on my book tour, and I happened to be hosting in a city that was very hot, but I figured, okay, like, we have air conditioning. For some reason, we had to host on their outdoor patio, and it was like 107 degrees. And the party was scheduled for 7 p.m., and where we were, it was not getting cooler by 7 p.m., and I was freaking out. I was like, oh my God, like, what are we going to do? And I showed up a little bit early, moved around a lot of furniture, put us in the shade. They had some misters. Once the party was going well, then the host gave the permission to move the party indoors because they saw what was happening. But oh my God, it could have gotten crazy. I mean, people could have been dropping like flies, I think.
That sucks.
What else? I had one party that was wild. It was with one of my best friends years ago in New York City. And it like ended with a bunch of us just kind of like stripping down to our underwear and like streaking the streets of New York City.
That's pretty hardcore.
You know, these are like the extreme sort of edge cases from someone who's hosted hundreds and hundreds of parties. The average party you're going to have is just going to be a lot of fun. You hanging out with your friends, new connections, lots of laughs. Fun stuff like that.
Yeah. Do you usually do like music in the background or anything like that?
Yes, I do music in the background. As simple as maybe the Beach Boys channel on some streaming service. I don't want the music to be so loud that you can't have conversations and that people can't hear each other. But I do want there to be some background music so it's upbeat and positive.
Dude, I never understood the super loud music. There's restaurants here in Scottsdale. And yes, the music, like, I seriously cannot hear anything anybody is saying. And I'm like, dude, you serve food here, like, having dinner? I seriously can't. I know there's a bar here, and it probably turns into something else, but why the hell is the music so loud?
It's so frustrating. There's a really good friend of mine, very successful real estate guy, and he has a hearing problem. And as we get older, it's more common than ever. He actually has to have his assistant go to the restaurants he's supposed to have meetings at in advance to check the volume, because he's like, I just can't hear anybody. Like, we have to leave. I've had to go places where I actually have to leave.
That's insane.
It's quite wild. Yeah.
Yeah, that's super crazy. So how often, you know, say you want to like get in a rhythm of, you know, doing these cocktail parties, and say you have a few successful ones, is there kind of like, you know, a cadence to it? Like one a month, one every couple months? Because I'm sure you can have, you know, too many or too little or, you know, whatever.
Sure. Similar to the amount of people that you invite, it depends on the strength of your network and how serious you want to be. there's folks I know who read my book and maybe they host twice a year. And for them, that's just a good cadence to see people once every 6 months or so. There's folks I know that are doing it once a quarter. And for them, they're out meeting people more active once a quarter, lets them, you know, meet folks when they're out and invite new people all the time. But on the other end of it, I know a guy who's out there in Scottsdale. His name is Lewis. He's hosting every month. Now, he's a younger guy who's really focused on his startup, and he's just really going hard to use this to build his network. And he's one of my best success stories. I think he's on his ninth party now, and he's just meeting tons of people and building an amazing network. But, you know, I would say once every 3 to 6 months is a pretty good cadence. Lewis Shulman, that's his name, yeah.
So are you inviting the same people that you invited to the first party again, or are you trying to like kind of pull, you know, just the key people that you thought were the most interesting with new ones?
I'm generally trying to invite half new people and half return guests.
That makes sense.
And I find that that's about a good mix for what I'm trying to do. And it keeps it interesting and exciting. Now, that being said, if you are inviting, once again, it depends based on the cadence of how often you're hosting. If you're hosting once every 6 months, invite the same people. But for me, the purpose of why I want to host is to meet new people and to really build my connections. So I really want to focus on the new people who I invite.
Love it. So is there anything that I didn't ask that you think listeners should know before we end this?
In general, just know that anyone can learn how to host a good event. And if you feel shy or introverted or like this takes you outside of your comfort zone, I can promise you that everyone wants to be invited to a party. Everyone wants to know someone who brings people together. And all you have to do is make that step to host an event. You know, you don't even have to be good at socializing. You can just be the host and let everybody else mix. My book really does a good job of laying out a structure so that you don't have to do a lot of work or even conversation yourself. Know, though, that any one party can help change your life. I've seen it happen with hundreds of people, and I think we all could use a new friend and more parties.
Yeah, I love it. Like I was telling you before, I could definitely see myself hosting one more than I can attending one, but maybe it's what some people need in building up their confidence into, you know, bigger things in life.
I think you're right.
Yeah. So where can people find you online and where can they find the book?
The name of my book is The 2-Hour Cocktail Party. You can find it wherever books are sold. I will note, I recorded the audiobook for it. So I think sweet. I did a pretty good job. It's fun. It's fun to listen to. So check that out on Audible or wherever else you can find those. Then I have a blog called called nickgray.net, and I have another one called How to Host a Party. And I'll include some links in the show notes about how to host a housewarming party, how to host a happy hour or a networking event. And if anybody out there is listening to this and wants to help me write an article on how to host a pool party, please reach out. I'd love to feature that on my website. That would be fun.
Let's go. I'm about to make a trip to Austin and do a pool party out there. Let's go.
That would be cool. Let's do it.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Nick. I really appreciate you taking the time to be on the show and giving the listeners all this information. I really appreciate you.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and leave us some feedback. We'd love to hear from you. You can find everything discussed in this episode and more in our show notes below or poolchasers2.0.com. This episode was produced by the amazing Kyle Auld. I'm Greg Viafania, and you've been listening to the Pool Chasers Podcast.